but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Ben Golliver, Washington Post, national NBA writer, joining us. Let's cue him up, Stephen. Ben Golliver, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, John. You know, I saw Mark Stein in Los Angeles last week, and he was telling me, John Canzano's killing it on Substack. So I just want to get that out of the way earlier and let you know you got a big fan down in SoCal.
Well, I love that. Thank you for that. But I got to tell people, when I decided to leave the paper, you were one of the first people that I texted with, and you were super encouraging, Ben. And I don't know if you were just being nice to be nice, but you were really, I really felt like you were on my side and rooting for me, and I appreciate that.
Not just on your side, I was on your neck, right? I mean, I was telling you, you got to do this.
And I know.
You took it and ran with it, and it's cool to see. I love what Mark's doing on Substack. I feel like some of the best writing out there right now is on that platform, so it's been great.
Means a lot. You're in Minnesota, man, and you got a big series in front of you. What's the feel like in that city when you get? I got to think when you go city to city, Ben, to cover these series, that you get a feel for the series when you get your feet on the ground.
No question. Well, I think the first part of the feel is just everybody's head spinning because the Warriors series just ended down in Houston like 2 days ago, right? So I think the Warriors are just trying to kind of get their bearings, and obviously the Timberwolves have been here relaxing in Minnesota, kind of waiting to see who they would play. The excitement here is up, I would say, but, you know, they've also had a tortured playoff history in basically every sport. So I think there's always a little bit of reluctance, to kind of get head over heels. But you see Anthony Edwards jerseys around town. It actually happens to be like 80 degrees and just perfect sunny weather today in Minnesota, which I was not expecting. So I think people are out sunbathing, really having a good time, just killing time until this late start tip, 8:30 here locally tonight for game one. But I think the confidence level is high. I think the Timberwolves fans expect to win this series. They've really just took care of the Lakers. They took care of Luka Doncic and LeBron James, and I feel like that gives them a level of certainty that they're going to be able to handle kind of the wisdom of Steph Curry, the wisdom of Draymond Green and Jimmy Butler. And I think people are also bracing probably for some fisticuffs too, right, or at least a little bit of drama. Anytime you've got Rudy Gobert and Draymond on the court together, something's bound to go wrong. You know, those guys just kind of hate each other. They've been rivals for Defensive Player of the Year for a decade. So I sense a lot of anticipation. I see a lot of sunburns because of the good weather, and I think people are ready ready for a blockbuster fight tonight.
In these NBA playoff series, there's generally a game and a half, where one team is sort of asserting itself, and then there's an adjustment to be made. Do you have a sense of who will throw the first punch in this series? Because everybody kind of looking at Minnesota rested, Golden State older, coming off a long series, tired, maybe some injury issues with Steph's thumb, and they're expecting maybe Golden State's just happy to have been in this round. But you know how the playoffs go, Ben. What do you feel like the first punch of this series is going to land like?
Well, I for sure think Minnesota's throwing the first punch. I think that they look at how they handled the Lakers in game one of that series, where they were the more physical team. They were going downhill towards the rim. They were getting all the rebounds. They really put the Lakers' defense back on their heels. I think that's what they're going to be trying to do here in game one as well. Much like the Lakers, the Warriors have an undersized front line, and it's a very, very good front line, especially defensively, because you got Draymond Green back there. But the Timberwolves just have big bodies. You know, it's Rudy Gobert, it's Julius Randle, it's Naz Reid, it's McDaniels, right? Those guys are all big, long, athletic, and they can contribute in a lot of different ways. And so really what the Timberwolves are trying to do is they're trying to overwhelm Golden State. They're trying to take advantage maybe of that exhaustion you're talking about, where the Warriors are trying to spin so quickly after the excitement of beating Houston to come back around and start a new series fresh. So I think it's going to be Minnesota trying to set the terms tonight, and that usually means Anthony Edwards. What he did so well against the Lakers was not doing too much, right? It was picking and choosing his opportunities to try to be a scorer, and then also involving his teammates with the pass. That's a level of kind of advanced maturity that we have not seen from Anthony Edwards in the past. He always wanted to be the guy who scored. He always wanted to be the guy that took the shot, and against the Lakers, that wasn't the case, and it really played to their benefit. The Timberwolves won games where Anthony Edwards did not play well, and that's something that just wouldn't have happened last year, right? They kind of were too dependent upon him. So I think he's going to look to set the tone physically, try to involve his teammates. They want to get their three-point shooting going, of course, and then they want to pound the rim, you know, going downhill with Randall and McDaniels. And I think that's going to be their game plan. For Golden State, I'm really glad you mentioned Steph's thumb. It's not getting talked about enough. I watched this guy warm up. First of all, he never misses during warm-ups. It's one of the most incredible sights you're ever going to see as a basketball fan. This is no small brace he's wearing on his thumb. I mean, it's wrapped up, taped up. It looks like it's, you know, big and awkward on his thumb. So I don't know how he's hitting all these clutch shots when his shooting hand is so messed up like that, but I guess that's why he's Steph Curry.
Do you have a sense on Steph and Jimmy Butler together, the combined health? Is there a question there in your mind, or are these guys healthier maybe than they've been in a couple games?
You know, I think Steph is okay. I mean, look, he put that Rockets game away in just such masterful fashion that, you know, any kind of injury talk would seem kind of silly, right? I mean, he's hitting the step back threes. He's flinging in layups over his head. He's getting double teamed at midcourt. None of it really matters. I mean, it was, you know, I don't want to call peak Steph Curry, but it was pretty close. You know, it reminded me a lot of the Olympics last summer, actually, there in Paris, where he was just breaking hearts and sending people home sad, right? Now, in terms of Jimmy, I'm not sure he's moving perfectly, right? And he had a big dagger jumper late in that game, so he was still able to get it done. He did a nice job, actually, on the defensive rebounding because Houston was so big. Golden State really needed its forwards to help out rebounding, and Jimmy did a good job with that. But he's just looked a little bit ginger, tender, you know, the way he's moving. And obviously he took that hard fall on his backside, so that's not a huge surprise there. I'm not convinced he's back to, like, full mobility quite yet. But I think we'll get a better sense for that as this series unfolded, because that injury now has been almost a week or 10 days ago that he's had to recover. It's also interesting, too, he's playing his former team, and most of his former teammates are gone, right? Karl Anthony Towns is gone. Wiggins is gone. But the Timberwolves did not want to pay Jimmy the amount of money that he wanted, and Jimmy Butler doesn't forget that kind of thing, as the Miami Heat know very well.
Draymond Green, always a wild card. What version are we going to get early in this series?
Well, the Warriors made a huge deal after Game 7, saying that Draymond Green gave a big speech saying that he had not been disciplined and smart enough in Game 6, that he was going to, you know, turn it back around and help them get over the top in Game 7, and he certainly did that. He did a great job against Alperen Şengün, the Rockets' young star. I mean, that guy just could not score easily against Draymond at all when it really mattered in Game 7, and so that was the good Draymond. The problem is, though, Draymond's had a lot of technical fouls and a lot of flagrant fouls already here in the playoffs. And so if he tries to come out and bully Rudy Gobert, or he's like swinging his hands around, maybe he's, you know, accidentally kicking people below the belt. I mean, we've seen it all from Draymond over the years. If that kind of stuff happens, he's going to start getting in trouble pretty soon, because they accumulate those flagrant foul points and eventually you get suspended. And so I think that, you know, Draymond has to be not on his best behavior, because you obviously want him to play with an edge, but he's got to be careful. He's got to live in the gray area. He can't go across that line. If he does, that's going to favor the Minnesota Timberwolves in a big way, because they just don't have a lot of interior defense besides Draymond Green. Their other options are really not what you would hope for. You know, one guy I would circle is Jonathan Kuminga. He's a player who's a big physical forward who you think would be able to help out and pitch in, and he basically gave Golden State nothing in that first-round series. He was terrible in Game 7. He could barely stay on the court. I think his confidence is shot because he got benched a little bit down the stretch of the regular season. And so I think from that standpoint, it just puts more pressure on Draymond. You got to be out there playing big minutes, and you got to behave yourself.
Ben Golliver, Washington Post National NBA writer. He's also written a book called Bubble Ball, if you haven't checked it out. Really cool book that we've talked about on this show before. I want to zoom out 20,000 feet on the playoffs. The Lakers go out. The season ends. You got J.J. Redick saying, we need to build, you know, we need to become a championship roster. You got LeBron doing his thing where maybe he's coming back. Maybe he's not. Of course he's coming back. But what do you make of kind of the Lakers season and kind of the annual, you know, festival of, gosh, they've got to build, they've got to be better, that happens every year?
Well, you know, it was it's like going to a movie that's really hyped with the big stars, and then, you know, I'm sure you've had this experience with your wife and children, and you come out of it and you say, you know what, the ending really sucked. Like, this is not where I thought it was going to go. I regret paying the money for the tickets, right? Like, why popcorn cost so much? I mean, that was the deal with the Lakers season. It was just a really, really flat ending to lose in five games. And I think one of the key takeaways, and this applies not just to the Lakers series, but across the NBA, defense is back in the playoffs. You know, during the regular season, you get this up and down, loosey-goosey style. Everybody gets their stats. LeBron puts up huge numbers. Luka puts up huge numbers. It's all fun and games. But the Lakers, I want to say they average like 13 or 14 fewer points per game in the playoffs than they did during the regular season. That is a massive drop. That's like a totally different sport. And obviously the referees are swallowing their whistles a little bit. The game is more physical. Lots more contact is being allowed going to the basket. And the Lakers could just not adjust to that style when it counted. Their defense wasn't good enough, and their offense, which was so pretty at times after they traded for Luka Doncic, it just couldn't continue to work like they had hoped. And so I think really what this does is it raises questions about how do you retool the Lakers going forward. You have to surround Luka with great defenders, just like the Mavericks did, right? The Mavericks spent basically three seasons trying to accumulate enough defenders around Luka to support him because he's so below standard on that end. And when you start to look at how much LeBron is making, the fact that he's already 40 years old, he'll be 41 in next year's playoffs, you have to wonder, does the next version of the Lakers that competes for championships, does it actually have Luka and LeBron on it, or do you have to split that duo up, like one way or another? Hmm. And the Lakers, they don't seem in any rush to move LeBron out the door. Obviously, he makes them a lot of money. He keeps them to be a prestige franchise in the league. But I think I'm in the camp now that says Luka and LeBron together cannot win a championship, and the next version of the Lakers that actually is worth the hype, right, that is worth the movie ticket price, it's not going to have LeBron James on it.
Wow. Does he do the farewell tour? I mean, do you see that? I mean, that's kind of the fashionable thing. I don't think LeBron leaves without getting his rocking chair and his Harley Davidson.
Well, look, he earned it, too. I mean, this has been an incredible career. I don't want to rush him out the door. It's more so, right, does he still fit with what the Lakers are trying to do, or has this now become Luka's franchise? And I do think it's kind of become Luka's franchise. I mean, the thing with the retirement tour, he was the one who floated it at All-Star Weekend saying, well, people have been asking me, you know, are you going to do a retirement tour or not? And I'm kind of 50-50 about it. And I think everybody who was there just kind of looked around and was like, 50-50, right, sure, okay.
Right.
And, you know, I think we've seen other guys get retirement tours, though. I mean, even Michael Jordan had Mariah Carey singing to him at All-Star Weekend, right? So I certainly would not begrudge him that. And actually getting to see a little bit of Kobe Bryant's retirement tour was a highlight for me personally, because when he showed up at All-Star Weekend in Toronto, you should have seen, I mean, international media members were bringing him gifts. They were violating every rule of journalism that there is, John, and trying to get autographs, selfies. I mean, everybody sort of who was there was like, well, this is going to be the last time to see Kobe play. And so they wanted to get their little souvenir to go home with. And the big rock star players, I mean, that they make the league go, and I think they deserve the credit on the way out, no question.
Ben, Greg Popovich stepping away from coaching. He'll go to the president or the jefe position. What's Pop's legacy, and what do you make of the events of the last few days?
Well, I think Pop's legacy is that it's awfully hard to sustain a dynasty in the NBA, and it's really hard to do it in a small market, right? I mean, when we look back at the Lakers, the Celtics, the Bulls of the 90s, right? I mean, those are huge prestige organizations, big markets. I mean, you understand how that could happen. You look at the San Antonio Spurs with Tim Duncan, David Robinson, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili. I mean, just keeping those guys in San Antonio, having a good enough culture where they didn't want to bail for the coasts, is an incredible accomplishment. And really, Popovich is the one who set the tone for that organization. And so I think culture, I think commitment, I think discipline, international scouting innovation, I think those are a lot of the things that get associated with Greg Popovich and his tenure. And, you know, there's other things, too. I mean, there's the political rants, the back and forth with the media members, you know, the surly personality, kind of always testing everybody, the love for wine. You know, there was a lot of layers to this guy. He was a pretty complicated and incredibly intelligent person, but the legacy always comes back to winning. I mean, nobody cares about Greg Popovich, and he doesn't last 28 years if he's not winning 50 games year after year after year and leading that organization to 5 titles. And so I love that he was willing to step aside. You know, I'm sure it was heartbreaking for him. I'm sure it was the last thing he possibly wanted to do. I bet he wanted to coach until the very end. I mean, that it was how committed he was to that job. But in my opinion, it's the right thing for the organization. And look, they've got Victor Wembanyama coming back next year, you know, probably be an MVP candidate coming off of the, you know, this this issue that's kind of shut his season down, the blood clot in his shoulder. They made a big trade for De'Aaron Fox. And don't look now, but they're one of the best possible suitors for Giannis in a trade as well to try to bring him down to San Antonio, because they've got a million draft picks. They've got all these salaries that they could trade. They can make Milwaukee quite an offer. And so I think it's the right time for Popovich to step aside, have a new era, a little bit of a younger era, and maybe, you know, maybe some fireworks this summer where they could land a superstar and really have this thing take off.
You mentioned Giannis before I let you go. Ben Golliver with us, Washington Post. He's in Minneapolis for the Lakers Timberwolves series, game one tonight, 6:30 Pacific time. But, Ben, you mentioned Giannis. Damian Lillard's got the Achilles injury. He's had surgery. Fair to say, do you think the door on Lillard's career, is it starting to close? Is it closing? Does he come back from this injury? What do you make of Lillard, and then what's going to happen in Milwaukee?
Well, almost always when we talk about superstar players, it's like the pre-Achilles, post-Achilles, right? You can just kind of draw a line and things are different. You know, for Kevin Durant, he suffered one right in his prime, and he hasn't made it back to a final sense. You know, I'm not even sure he's made it to a conference final sense. And he's played, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of great basketball since having that injury. I guess it was during the 2019 finals, so about 6 years of great basketball. But he just hasn't been quite the same impact-level player. Kobe Bryant had a very similar situation where he was never really playing a high-level, meaningful playoff basketball after his Achilles injury as well. And so, you know, it doesn't mean that Lillard couldn't play till he's 40. He could certainly play till he's 40, but NBA history would suggest he's not going to be competing for championships as a major player after this injury. And if he does, more power to him, but I think that's just a realistic expectation. You have to give him credit. He, you know, came back from his own blood clot issue and just ran it till the wheels fall off, as they say, right? And he gave it a shot. Milwaukee didn't have it this year. He sacrificed for his organization, and it will alter his career. There's no way around it, because it's going to cost him most likely all of next season. So you have to salute him for that. I noticed in Giannis's kind of season-ending comments, he went out of his way to praise Lillard's commitment to the Bucks for doing that, and he understands what kind of a sacrifice that is. So, you know, kudos to Dame, but you got to be realistic about this going forward. And if you're the Bucks, you can't operate with this idea of like, well, we have Giannis and Dame, so we're going to be contenders no matter what once Dame comes back healthy. That's just really not how it works. And I think if you're Giannis, the big question this summer becomes, do you love Milwaukee so much that you can't leave? Or has there been enough things that happened with the Bucks in terms of Lillard's injury, Brooke Lopez getting older, Bobby Portis getting older, where you can look around and say, we don't have any draft picks to make trades to get our team better. Maybe it's time for me to go somewhere else and have a new chapter. And Giannis is right at that crossroads moment. You know, when these guys turn 30, you know, like LeBron, right around the same time, he wanted to bounce from Miami back to Cleveland. Kevin Durant left Golden State for Brooklyn right around that same time. Michael Jordan went to go play baseball for a year and came back right around that same time. Like, 30 is the midlife crisis era for NBA superstars. That's typically how it goes, right? And so Giannis is right square in that mentality, and it's possible he's one of the few stars who says, you know what, I'd rather just stay in Milwaukee because my family's here, life is good, and I don't define myself only by championships. But for a number of times over the years, Giannis has said, I need a second ring, I need a second ring, and I just don't think he's going to be able to get it in Milwaukee anytime soon. And so that means well, he's probably going to be looking at some of these trade scenarios, and he's probably going to be the biggest name that we talk about all summer long.
National NBA writer from the Washington Post, Ben Golliver, with us. Finally, Adam Silver's talked expansion. Everybody thinks Seattle and Vegas. Any sense there, Ben, of when this happens?
No, I mean, they're checking boxes, right? I mean, they talked about wanting to get the collective bargaining agreement done. They did that. They talked about wanting to get the new TV rights deals done. And they have they got that done, and they got a really big number on their media rights deals, right? So those are very lucrative long-term agreements. They're going to be starting up with Amazon and NBC as well as ESPN next season. So those were things that Adam Silver talked about wanting to kind of check off the list before they went to the expansion route. The other big one that happened was that the Boston Celtics sold for $6 billion. That's a lot of money, and it's also a nice round number, right? So if you're thinking about how much would it cost as an expansion fee to kind of buy into the NBA right now, well, that's a very nice comparison point, right, to say, hey, look, the Celtics are worth six, so, pony up. So I think that everything's starting to line up, but I'll be honest, I mean, they've dragged this thing out so long. We've been talking expansion in the NBA for the last 15 years, right? So I am officially in the camp of the cynic that says, hey, I cannot wait until Las Vegas has a team because that's close to me in L.A. I cannot wait for a team to be in Seattle because it's a great excuse to come back up to the Pacific Northwest and see guys like you up there, right? But until they're going to do it, I'm not holding my breath.
Ben Golliver, you're the best. Hey, appreciate all the encouragement and all the information. And, people, you can read Ben Golliver at WashingtonPost.com. Check out his book. For those of you interested in the NBA and the bubble ball inside the NBA's fight to save the season, still a great read if you're looking for a postseason read. Ben Golliver, thank you, man.
Thanks, Josh. Take care, man.
All right, there you go. Steven, you can put him on hold. Steven, quickly, before we go to break here, Warriors-Timberwolves game one. Everyone's expecting Minnesota to win this game. Why do I think the Golden State Warriors are going to take it?
Because they got veterans like Stephen Curry, and as Ben Golliver said, he doesn't miss. And so, like, if he gets an open look at the playoffs is going in. I'm with Golliver. I'm with most people. I think Minnesota gets this game done. I actually think this is kind of a bad matchup for Golden State. I think Minnesota, the way they play, the depth that they have, the athleticism that they have, is going to cause some problems for Golden State and their older players. But you might be right, because we've seen the road teams already here in round two get upsets. All three game ones have been won by the road team, so maybe the Warriors can make a four.
Well, we will see. Golden State going to Minnesota tonight, 6:30 on TNT. Leave it here.